Daniel, you're very welcome to the show. Daniel, I noticed that you're originally from New Zealand, spent several years in Australia, and you're now living in London. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that journey? What brought you to London via that road?
Yeah, I suppose it all started growing up in New Zealand. I got into sales in a sort of a weird way. IT sales specifically, I was working in a store that sold Apple computers. It was my first sort of proper sales job. And if I'm very honest, I was intrigued by the resellers that would come in driving their Mercedes and Porsches. And I actually went to go work for this reseller originally to be a IT engineer. I thought that's where my life was headed. I was really my whole life intrigued by technology until that time. And within 6 months, I think I was a BDM.
Interesting.
So that's my entry into sales. And that's where I think it all sort of started for me, and then the journey that led me to here now.
Yeah. You say BDM. That, I'm guessing that wasn't an Apple though, right?
No, so not originally. So I worked for a company called Magnum Mac, but they were bought out by, at a later time, I went back to work for them, and they were bought out by the New Zealand Apple, which was run a sort of a different way than most Apples in country.
Interesting. And so why London?
Yeah, so, well, my goal was to grow. So when I got to a certain point in New Zealand, I was like, where can I go from here? And for me, there was a couple of different scenarios that led to my move. One was in Christchurch. I don't know if you know, there was some pretty dramatic earthquakes that
nearly remember. City. Yeah.
So I was there for that. And Sydney looked like the land of milk and honey. So that's where I went to. For me, it was it was exciting, but also a reality shock. You know, you go from a market where you're well known to a market where you're completely green and have to create your whole network again. Mm. I think I left Australia quite successful. I was doing quite well. I felt like I'd achieved what I wanted to achieve there, and the next logical step for me was moving to Europe or the States. And I've got British citizenship by birth, so this is where I ended up.
Interesting. So you're a prolific writer on the topic of sales. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what prompted you to start that process of being in the advice educational side of the business.
Do you know what? It actually started off, I always wanted to help people as much as possible. I think that's why I got into leadership in the first place. To me, it's the most exciting thing to do is be able to watch someone else do what you can do successfully. Mm. But I was actually very lucky that a few years ago, I was working with Tony Hughes, who's ridiculously prolific online. And I was guided by him a little bit as to what to do with LinkedIn specifically.
Okay.
The more I got into it, the more I enjoyed being able to share those sort of points of views. You create a community online, there's people asking questions or have different ideas. I think it's exciting. And it also, if you can help, you know, just one or two people every time you do a post, it's well worth it.
Now, you can always tell somebody's sales philosophy by as much as what they're for as they are, what they're against, what drives them nuts. So maybe you could share with us both sides of that equation. What are the kind of sales practices, behaviors that you see out there that really push your buttons? And then we'll go into, well, what are the things we see that give you huge encouragement for sales for the future? Let's start with the buttons first.
Yeah, do you know what? It's funny you asked that. I made a comment one of my posts last week, and the person, I can't even remember what it was about, but this was the reply. I remember it quite well. The person said, a bad salesperson can't sell a good product, but a good salesperson can sell a bad product. And that really annoyed me because that goes against everything I believe about sales. And it perpetuates what people believe salesmen are like. So a good salesperson would never sell a bad product because that would be unethical.
Yeah, I understand that. I just wondered if that's what they meant. I mean, I fully understand where you're coming from, because it's a little bit counterintuitive.
Right.
I guess it might be better to say that a good salesperson can sell an average product. I don't see, maybe what I'm thinking of is that there are products that are not, you know, you work for Apple, superb product, but Apple are up against a lot of competitors who just not as good. And you're going to get that in any market. However, the not as good product could be good enough. It could be the right fit, given the price quality point for somebody. So, well,
absolutely. But in that case, for that particular person, for that client, for that sale, that's the perfect product.
Yeah, and it does take a really good salesperson to sell a product that may not be best in class. However, and what they'll do is they'll find the right fit. So for their prospect, for their customer, it might be the best, but in the market, it may not be.
That all comes back down to another one of my pet peeves you've after them is people's obsession with closing. I think you just mentioned it perfectly, right? As it comes down to prospecting. If you've got a product that's not as good as someone else's product, but it might have its own niche.
Yeah.
And every product does, right?
Yeah.
There's an overlap where you have your own niche. You prospect to your niche target audience, the audience that needs your product the most.
Yeah.
And it might simply be because your product's the cheapest and there's a group of people who need a product that does a certain level of something within a price point.
Yeah, and I think also when you separate things out between B2C and B2B, it takes on a whole life of its own as well. Because I know, sorry, you know, photography was a hobby of mine and I have a huge interest in cameras, and answering that question, what's best, is impossible, because some of them connect with you on such an emotional level. Whereas in a B2B world, that's less important than it is, say, as a consumer. So it can get quite nuanced, I'd imagine, answering that question. But come back to me. I read one of your articles that and there was a nice quote in it. It said that people don't pay you to sell, they pay you to close.
Yes. So, I mean, what's the purpose of a sale?
Yeah.
Selling. You essentially, it's nice for people to say we're here to build relationships, we're here to do the right thing, we're here to, and these are all parts of getting to a sale. But at the end of the day, your job as a salesperson is to close sales.
Yeah, I really like that, Daniel, because it was a reminder for me, and it was something that is so easy to lose sight of, because there's so much pressure on people to prospect, and there's pressure on people to qualify, that we lose sight of that. I remember David Sanders said, he said, the bottom line of selling is going to the bank, not to help people necessarily. You go to the bank by helping people, but that's not your purpose. If it is, as somebody said, you know, join the Red Cross. And we often lose sight of that. It is, the bottom line is closing deals and getting that money into the bank, and that if that's not happening, everything up to that point is a waste.
Right, and we do that through doing our jobs properly as salespeople.
Yeah.
Right. So all those other things lead up to you making money, and that's what we're all in business for.
Mm.
I don't know anyone who's not in business for making money, unless you're a charity, and in which case you're genuinely not in business to make money.
Yeah, and even there, you see a lot of people who are running charities. They have to make money because they have big salaries to they're not into making a profit, but they still have to get people to hand over money.
Absolutely. So their outcome is to help people, though. So they end at that point. That's their end point.
For sure. For sure. Tell me, do you have a book in the pipeline? Back of your mind.
I've not talked to anyone about it except from a couple of mentors. But yes, I'm in the middle of writing a book. I'm 10,000 words in, but I'm tossing up how long it's going to be.
Could you share with us what the general theme is, or who's it for, and what are you trying to help them with?
Sure. I want to debunk the whole social selling myth out there. I don't think it's something that's difficult, and I don't think that it is something that people need to pay a lot of money to learn about or to struggle with. There's some simple philosophies that you can easily implement to be at least better than average, and I think that that's all right.
What's the myth, Daniel, that you're debunking?
So, for instance, one of my messages today will be online. My video that I'll release after this podcast is recorded is about prospecting. And I think there's so much controversy and information and conversations online with regards to social selling being the way of the future, cold calling's dead. And I think there's so much just concentration on this one topic that people are losing sight of actually what social is there for. Mm. It's a method to do what we've always done. Nothing's changed. That's my point of view anyway.
Well, you're pushing at an open door. I agree with you 100%. And I often wonder, what are the motives behind people who push that argument that it's now all about social selling, which even the term social selling, it's just one of those things that pushes my button, because selling has always been social. And what we look at when people talk about social selling and they look at, you know, using tools like LinkedIn for research or for making initial contact, that in itself is not even selling. So that's why I think maybe I'm being a real pedant when it comes to the terms. However, in terms of what it does, I think you're absolutely right. It's just another string to your bow. It's just another method that already existed, but you can now do with a whole lot less hassle. I mean, you could always research somebody before. You could always contact people before with just some of those the social media platforms. It's just now a whole lot easier, and you can do it at scale. But I don't think, other than that, that it adds anything.
I think that actually it does add a lot. I think it does add a lot of value. Mm-hmm. And I feel all right to talk about social, and maybe, you know, it's not the best way to prospect. I've had what, 250,000 views on my content in the last week. So I'm not doing this from a place of fear of not being able to be social or not having viewable content. I'm doing it from a place of, how do we really use these tools? And what has sales always been? I don't think sales has ever changed. I don't think it's ever going to.
No, but look even at that one, Daniel. You said you had 250,000 views, and that's phenomenal. But isn't that just marketing? That's not selling. That's marketing. You're getting your name out there. You're getting known. People are familiar with who you are. It's when it comes to selling, whether, you know, even when we move back past prospecting, where does it come into play there, other than, you know, other than a glorified, now again, I am focusing here for the moment on LinkedIn because it's the most well-known platform and the one that's most widely used, but just focusing on LinkedIn. And I'm a huge fan, but to me, it's at some level, it's a glorified CRM where I can go in and find out, you know, individuals in an organization. Oh, that's fantastic to get that insight. But at the end of the day, I still have to pick up the phone. I still have to speak to these people. And what I see a lot of where the practice falls down is where I see people hiding behind the tools and emailing people as a substitute for email. And they kid themselves that they're selling rather than pick the phone up and have a conversation with somebody. And I'm just wondering, is that something you see in your world?
Yeah, so apart from being a place where you can research in a glorified CRM, I do think it has some other key benefits. So please excuse my lack of precise figures, but there is some sort of research that's been done. So psychologically, a person needs to consume, it's something like 50 or 70 minutes of your content before they trust you enough to make a buying decision.
Mm-hmm.
So social is just another medium in which we are putting across that content. It could be through a meeting, it could be through a book, it could be through a advertisement in the newspaper. Now, the reason why social may be speeding up B2B business is that if you are creating content and you are actually giving value up front to your clients and putting them in a position where they are already knowledgeable, powerful prior to talking to you, then they already feel comfortable with you. That actually hasn't changed the buying cycle. They still needed that time to become comfortable with you. All it's done is changed the medium. The other thing is when you're looking at B2C and people saying, oh, I've had success through selling, you know, actual deals through InMail, what you've got to think about, what are they actually selling? Are they selling something that is specific to them? Or are they selling something where the customer already knows about that product and that's 50, 70 minutes is transferable now to the product? For instance, if someone was to go decide to buy an Apple TV, the person who they buy it from is probably inconsequential, but that transferable time that they needed to make that buying decision has been transferred to the product.
Yeah, no, I see that. I guess where I'm coming from, I wonder if, and again, maybe this is because my world is B2B, not B2C. I don't know the B2C world.
Absolutely. My world is as well. So
is that if you took, say, so we're going to rule out Facebook and Twitter for a moment and just say, let's look at LinkedIn. You took that away and just closed down LinkedIn platform in the morning. How would you share content with people? Via your website, via email.
Well, just think about how did we do it before we had LinkedIn?
Yeah, exactly. My point is you'd still do it and you still have no problem with it. So I just wondering if we're conflating two different things, if we're giving credit to a tool that really all it does is it accelerates or maybe at scale, because if somebody shares your content with their network, then a lot more people see it. So that's giving your content scale, which is a powerful, powerful marketing tool. But from a...
If your content adds real value to people, that's the important bit, I think.
Yeah.
So if you had a business, I don't know, cleaning drain pipes, and you gave people really good value on how they could reduce the chances of needing your services, how they can save money in those situations, how they can be preventative to ensure those situations don't happen, that's adding value to your clients, right?
Sure is. But could you not just do that on your website and an article on your website? Now, it's harder.
Your website.
Yeah, it's harder to find it. You see, but this is my point, is that it's making that connection between the content, the value, and the end user. So it's accelerating that, and it allows you to do it at scale.
Right. So LinkedIn's a tool, right?
That's it. I think the problem people I see is that they see it as a whole new method of selling, and it isn't. It's putting a magnifying glass over what was there and giving it scale and depth. But it's unless the underlying content is good, then it counts for nothing. And I think that's where I see some of the problems, is that a lot of the content is poor. That's one thing. Secondly, also the medium is the message. I mean, you know, it's an old advertising maxim. And for example, if you saw an advertise, let's say take that drain pipe cleaning services, if you saw that in a local free newspaper and you saw an ad in Forbes magazine, well, which one would have more weight in your mind? Forbes would, because of the brand of Forbes, for example. And therefore, my concern is, because there's so much poor content being pushed out and it's free, it tends to devalue the channel. So I just wonder now, and I think this is evolving, could be completely wrong with this, is that as LinkedIn becomes more ubiquitous and there's more content, and it's now becoming more noise, it's harder and harder to see through that, and therefore the content has less value. Clearly, people like yourself, people like Tony, et cetera, who have worked hard at this, you've risen to the top. I wonder, though, if it's getting harder for people now to rise to the top and build that personal brand, because the channels are almost being overcrowded with, you know, everybody's pushing their stuff through this channel. And it's almost to a stage now. And I had this conversation with my guest last week on a podcast, which was where, you know, you want to get somebody's attention, send them a letter, put it in an envelope, handwrite it. That will get to them. Where if you try to get it now through these crowded channels, it can actually be very, very difficult.
First of all, there's amazing tools or methods to do outreach to your clients. I was talking to someone the other day, and one of my posts, I don't know if you saw it, I said, send a postcard. Mm. And I'm not joking. A lot of the time I talk to people about a customer avatar. So actually creating a avatar of who your perfect client is. So who's the person that's buying And I mean down to what sort of age group are they? Where do they live? How do they start their morning? And if you start getting that kind of information together, something, a picture of who you're targeting, then you can start thinking, well, how do I get to this person? Do I go door to door? Is that the kind of business method I could use? There's a lot to be said for putting your face in front of a reception desk. Mm-hmm. Am I better to be holding info breakfast seminars on my product or services that I can actually help people without them needing to buy from me? But when they need to buy this service or product, they're going to come to me. There's a myriad of other different things. You got referral selling, text messaging. People are not doing it properly at the moment, but text messaging or messaging services, I think, will be massive. Inbound leads, what are you doing with your marketing? But to get back to LinkedIn just quickly, there's nothing wrong with LinkedIn. And can you be, can your good quality content still be in front of the right people? I believe absolutely. You've got platforms like YouTube, which have been around for a long time, and there's been people that have been doing that on there for 5 years and they're successful. There's been people that have been doing it for 6 months and they're successful. And what you find is it's the people that do good quality content which rise to the top. Now, yeah. If I went onto YouTube today and just started putting out a whole bunch of videos trying to sell my product, the likelihood is it's not going to be a very successful channel.
Yeah, no, it's very true. You're spot on with that. My concern always, though, is with the content side of things is that, first of all, reps don't have time, or nor do they have the skill sets to create and produce really valuable content.
Absolutely. And should your sales reps be content creators?
No, they shouldn't. But here's the other side of that, is where I see it in companies where they have internal content teams, or it could be third-party content, and then what they do is they just share it without adding any value to it. And also, I think that's also missing a point, whereas if even they just said, look, really liked Daniel's article, what he said about social media and content creation was spot on. Even just adding that to it would make a lot of difference. But I see people and all they just share content, and I think somehow or other they're missing the potential that...
Well, absolutely. I've left my last role before I could implement any of this, but my whole theory around how individuals in the business use LinkedIn or use social media to their advantage is they are going to, or they should be, to be honest, go to client meetings all day, every day if they're doing B2B, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if they're doing their job properly, they're helping their clients every day.
Yep.
How hard is it to walk out of a client meeting and do a quick video? And if you don't like video, I'm sure you're texting 100 people during the day, put a quick one sentence together, just walked out of a client meeting. You don't have to say who the client is. Just walked out of a client meeting. This is how I was able to help them. They shared this piece of information with me, and I suddenly realized what our company could do to benefit them. That's going to help.
That is a top tip, Daniel. That really is, because it's, first of all, it's quick, it's easy, but it's real. It's a real story, and it's going to be different. Every client has their own nuance. And so really? Just walked out of this client, it might have been, say, a car dealership, and this was the challenge they had. Here's how we were to help them. 5 or 6 lines. And that's far more valuable as content than just reposting somebody else's bland post.
This is the other problem, is that people who I've talked to think that they have to sit down and they have to think about all this content that they create, and they have to make something up that people are going to be interested in. But if they've created their network properly, then the people that they're talking to, and it might be 50 people on their LinkedIn, it doesn't matter. It's whether you're talking to the right people. If you're talking to 50 people that really want your high-level service or offering, and you're saying, this is how I just help someone else, and they talked to you 6 months ago and now they need you, or they need someone that offers what you're offering, who are they going to go with?
It's true. It's very true. And you know, the irony of this is that people who, you know, will say, I don't have time because I'm too busy, which is true. They're busy, but that actually gives them more opportunity to tell those stories. If you have 4 productive meetings in a day, that's 4 of those messages that you have. Or even if you take 2 of them away, you still have 2 pieces of very valuable content that you can share. So we'll the irony
of the day with a one post at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. And now here's the opportunity. If you could repackage that as well and have it put into your CRM, you keep your boss off your back for your call report as well.
Imagine that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I think Gary Vaynerchuk, I think any of us who post online will know who he is.
Yes.
He says it perfectly. You document, don't create.
Yeah. That actually, I love that. I have mixed feelings about a lot of Gary's content. I mean, most of it is most just spot do. On. and I don't think he'd have it any other way, because you're Marmite if you're trying to please everybody. But
it's his brand as well, isn't it?
For sure it is. It is. And of all the things that stuck with me, I think that document, don't create. Although I think when you're documenting, you are creating, but it's
absolutely. But I get where he's trying to make a complex situation sound really simple, and because it really is simple, probably.
Yeah.
And for all those people out there who are struggling with how do I use social to benefit me?
Yeah.
Rather than trying to use it to email people or trying to talk to people that you've never talked to, or the most hated is connect and sell. Put out information. Talk about what you've done to help other people.
Yeah.
That's what people want to hear, right?
Yeah. And the great thing is, all you need is your phone. I see it as a company I'm very familiar with, large IT organization, and they started to produce their own videos recently. And somebody took a snapshot of their studio, and they must have spent $100,000 on this thing. They have a massive editing suite with TV screens, and it's crazy. And I think that's off-putting for a lot of people, because again, people forget all you need is a little phone, walk along, shoot a video, take 30 seconds, take a minute to, recall what happened, as you said, without mentioning any names, and or what lesson I learned. Maybe I screwed things up and I learned a valuable lesson. Those kind of videos are
powerful. That allows people to connect with you, right? That makes you a real person who's actually doing this day to day. Otherwise, you're a picture at best, and the people that don't have pictures on their LinkedIn profiles need to probably change that in the next.
Tell me something, Daniel. I'm conscious of time, and I wanted to talk to you about some of your articles, and that you are prolific on the article front. What I'd like you to do for me is tell me a little bit about, first of all, your most popular article. What was it, and why? And then the other question I have is your favorite article. What was it that you just had to say?
Well, what do you classify as popular?
Okay, quick question. I would say the one that got most interaction.
The one that got most interaction. Well, the one that got most interaction is funny, because the actual article is asking about the specific thing. So it was only a week ago,
mm-hmm.
and it was asking what's better, a post with 250,000 views and 1,000 likes, or a post with 270 views and 9 likes.
Interesting. Wow. That's, I did not know that when you asked me that, but yeah. And so what was there a conclusion?
Do you know what? I think that the conclusion is that it doesn't really matter about likes. A lot of people said, this is a stupid question, it's all about the views. And so I had to clarify that. It's obviously one view for 250, one like for 250 views, or one like for 30 views. So,
mm-hmm.
which is better. And I think the real thing that came out of that, and which is where I wanted it to go anyway, is it's all about creating community, right? So it's not really about likes, comments, or anything else. The comments are best, because you actually get to talk to other people about what their thoughts are or what they're experiencing day to day. And that is a very, that's not a very common sort of post for me to ask that sort of question. I'm usually posting sales thoughts or quotes around sales or actionable items. And I'm trying to move a lot more to actionable tips and advice. I think I don't really care as much about the, likes and views, a bit more about how many people can I help.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's about community and about when I say proper interaction, people who are really engaged in the conversation,
right?
I think then you have a tribe, but likes you don't. It's easy, just it's like somebody nods their head and walks on.
Yep. And it does sound like a bit of a strange word, but it is about creating a tribe, so a following of people. And not everyone's going to believe in what you think. Mm-hmm. But if you're bold enough to put yourself out there, then you can expect both ways, can't you?
Yeah, I think, yep. Yep.
And you're going to find people that are hopefully, and also listen to your community, because if you keep on just blindly doing whatever you want to do, you could do that. But maybe, you know, changing things. I talk about A/B testing a lot. You know, does this way help somebody, or does this way? My passion on there is to actually help people. Yeah. Some people's passion is just to share their mind, and in which case, it doesn't really matter whether people comment, like, or swear at you. As long as you feel good about it, right? So everybody's got a different reason for...
I fall into that trap myself sometimes. Sometimes I'm just trying to get something off my chest, and it there's no added value in it.
But what I do have to say is that for you, that's not as important. But for somebody who's trying to use LinkedIn as a sales tool, their brand's important. Who they are is important. So what they write about is important as well. Their customers are reading it. Hopefully, if the LinkedIn algorithm doesn't hide it all from them.
Yeah, that's a whole other story. So tell me about the article then, that the one that you really had to write. It may not have got the most number of likes, but it was the one that you're probably your go-to from your own perspective. You feel most proud of.
Joe, I don't. It sounds like a cop out, but I don't really have one. I mean, every day, all of my quote posts are done on a Sunday, and I spend about 4 to 5 hours doing those.
Wow.
My videos are done. It takes a whole day. So it takes about 8 hours.
Yeah.
Each 1 minute 30 video, or what, around about, takes about an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had to do the outtakes of those videos, it would probably fill up everyone's day. So I think just any time where I've been able to actually help someone, or someone messages me and says, you know, well, that was really helpful.
Mm. That does it for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I put a video out last week, and it was about sales books, and it wasn't the best sales books. Just here's my top 7 that I'm reading at the moment.
Yeah.
Apart from a few female sales training friends that contacted me and said that I didn't include any females, and I do apologize for that.
Yeah, but it's easy to happen, because as a proportion of the books that are written, they're in the minority.
Why is that though, Paul?
I honestly don't know. There's no practical reason for it, I don't think, but I'm coming from a male perspective, so it's hard to answer that. I wonder, you know, I think there is something in the male psyche that is, I don't want to use the word more confident. Maybe it's just, it's the testosterone. Even though we're probably not qualified to write a book, our ego says, I'm going to write a book where I think the female psyche is, would maybe feel less confident about doing something. Now, hey, that's only coming from my own limited experience of the male-female psyche. But I do think that has a large role to play. If I look at the females in my life and the males in my life, whether it's my own kids, my wife, brothers or sisters, etc., the males tend to have a lot more bravado, not necessarily backed up by capability. But that doesn't seem to matter. It doesn't stop people going out and saying, I can write a book. Sure, off you go.
I'm lucky. I come from a family where my mother is a world-renowned speaker and lecturer and researcher.
Why do you think then there's so few books written by women authors in this space?
I don't. I feel like this is a rabbit hole.
That your way of saying, Daniel, let's not go down there. There's no lights down the back of this place.
I know there's some great books from lots of salespeople who are women.
But there are. I mean, some of my favorite sales books are not actually sales books. They're not on that shelf. Right. They're in the psychology sector. You know, right. So you have Carl Dweck, you have Amy Cuddy, you know, there's another one, and like her name won't come to me. I've come to a blank on it, but they're the best out there. And so maybe we're just looking on the wrong shelf.
Right. And do you know what? That's actually just for all salespeople in general, is that you don't need to go buy a sales book it's not all about sales books. I mean, one of the books, in fact, I'm sitting on my desk right in front of me, is Simon Sinek's Start With Why. Mm-hmm. I think that's probably an amazing book for salespeople.
Yep.
And it actually probably be the, one of the best books to figure out how do you create content and how do you start conversations with clients. Mm. So, and that's got nothing to do with sales specifically. The other thing, there's plenty of books out. There's plenty of books written by women for sales. Yeah. I know the one person who called me up and talked to me about it on Friday was Alison Edgar. She's just released a brand new book. I think it's coming out the 3rd of March. So, and that's a specific sales book.
Is there a name for that for our listeners?
Secrets of Successful Sales.
No, again, coming back to it, I think just for our listeners that the best books are not necessarily on the sales shelf. They're in the psychology sector because they're about understanding humans and communication. Like the phenomenal book, Amy Cuddy, on presence. And that to me is a concept that seems to been lost in this whole drive towards whether it's social selling or a sales process or sales methodology. What's completely lost is that emotional impact we as humans have on other fellow human beings and understanding that. And Carl Dweck talking about the fixed mindset versus the growth mindset. These concepts are far more important to me than sales process or sales methodology.
Do you know what? I think you've made a really good point, and it's important for all salespeople, is that all of these books on, learn how to prospect first, but all these books on prospecting, selling, closing methods, I mean, they're all fairly useless unless you've got some basic understanding of who you are and where you need to be.
Yeah.
The amount of salespeople that I've seen struggling that are having bad, and maybe this is a bit off topic, but I think it's really important for salespeople, is bad relationships or bad health or eating habits or sleeping or partying too much. That actually all comes down to being a really good salesperson. People refer to the term sales professional, and whether a salesperson can be a professional, just sort of like an intellectual argument, to be honest. But what interests me is the word professional. And when you look at a sports player or somebody who is a professional weightlifter, for instance, or someone like that, they spend their whole life dedicating to the outcome that they need for a competition or for a game. And for us, our key part of our day where we should be doing all of that training for and focusing on and working to make sure that we're in the best state to be able to do that is to be able to get that sale, because closing sales is what we are doing. That's our job. I think a lot of people leave themselves in really poor state to do that.
Yeah, it's true. I just wonder though how much that sports analogy holds up. I mean, you often see this in a sales associations, professional bodies, where you'll see where there's a lunch talk, and it's often they'll get a sports personality in to talk about high performance. Well, mm-hmm. How many sports teams get sales leaders in to talk about high performance?
It's probably because we're not doing it properly. No, I'm just joking, Paul.
My point is, I wonder how transferable. For example, there was a friend of mine who said this to me recently, and somebody in his network is a very senior figure in the Irish rugby circuit and would be involved in a lot of after-dinner, keynotes and after-dinner speeches because of who he is. And one of his insights is, privately, he'll say, to waste your money, because this particular guy who's a coach can drop any player he likes at a given notice without having to worry about HR on his back. And so he has that tool in his tool. First of all, he has a group of self-selected professionals on his team. That's the first thing. So these people have bubbled up through a system over maybe 2 decades. Secondly, he can go, okay, you're off the team until I decide otherwise. And so he has those motivational tools that are just not available to business leaders. And so therefore, and the other side of things with sports is that you'll have a team like a professional rugby team or a soccer team. Yeah, they get to practice all week, but that's they only play for 90 minutes on the weekend, so you have all week to practice. It's completely reversed in the sales world, where you're actually playing all week and maybe you've got 90 minutes some stage in the week. Now, the real issue is a lot of people don't even use those 90 minutes. So that's completely moot point there. But
well, the other question is if we swapped it around, and let's just say it's not 90 minutes, it's that's half a day versus 4.5 days.
Fair.
If we swapped it around and we gave them 4.5 days of training to be the best, and they spent half a day selling, would their close rate go up?
I think it would. If you gave them 1-2 meetings that you could do in a half a day, would there be better outcomes of those? Probably would, but it's an academic argument. I don't think anyone's ever going to see that. But I think there has to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, so I'm not specifically arguing that. What I'm saying is if you're going to be a professional salesperson and you want to be the best in your business, go to sleep early, wake up, have a routine, eat well, go to the gym, work, at least go for a walk in the morning. I think meditation is probably very underrated. Put yourself in the best frame of mind as soon as you walk into work. And that's what I don't think a lot of people are doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Daniel, you talk a lot of sense.
Thank you.
And I say that because we're up on time. I want to thank you for being my guest today. You've shared some wonderful insights. Thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed the chat and some wonderful insights there for our listeners.
Thanks very much for having me.
Not at all. My pleasure.